Hello, I'm Ed Butler. Welcome to In the Balance, the world service show that aims to take those big financial stories and to explain why they matter to the likes of you and me. Today, our theme is migration, the crisis affecting Europe, which has hit the headlines this year, and the escalating death toll among those seeking entry across the waters of the Mediterranean. As many as 2,000 people are thought to have died making that crossing into Europe this year alone. So let's look at this now through the prism of one of the countries in the front line, Greece, dominated recently by economic coverage of a different kind. Let's examine the complex and at times desperate plight of those fleeing from poverty and the world's war zones in Africa and the Middle East into Greece. I'm joined now from the island of Lesbos by the BBC reporter Anna Holligan. Anna, tell us, where exactly are you right now?
Well, Ed, I'm in a very colourful refugee camp on the south of the island. This is Europe's newest refugee camp, the official detention centre here on the island of Lesbos, idyllic island, Greece's third largest. The refugees are landing on the beaches of this island. It's a 60-kilometre walk through the hills of Lesbos from the north of the island to the detention centre here in the south. The problem is that this camp is overflowing. There are absolutely no facilities. There's a tap in the ground where women are washing their clothes and filling up their plastic water bottles. Children are brushing their teeth. Men are having showers. Yesterday, I met a man called Najib. He's 29 years old. He comes from Aleppo, and he paid smugglers to get him to Greece. Earlier on, he showed me around this camp.
The first shock is this scene. You have no facilities. It's a sewage swamp, actually. It's a catastrophe for health. It's garbage in general, and you feel like there's dead bodies there. There are no dead bodies, actually, but it smells like that, because I've smelled that in Syria, and I can tell you it smells like that. In Aleppo, seeing people around getting killed, and then getting bullets around me so many times, I was... like, I survived by chance, and I couldn't take more chances. Compared to other ways, this is the safest one.
That was a very understandably emotional Najib talking to me yesterday. You might be able to hear now, there are lots of people running past us. They think there may be a food delivery coming. And Ed, this is just a reminder that Greece is dealing with two crises simultaneously, a financial one on one hand and this humanitarian one. And Greece is a country, as we all know, under huge economic strain at the moment. There aren't the resources on this island or indeed in this country to deal with the refugee crisis on the scale of this one. And there are just three police officers on shift, assisted by 10 others, trying to process the hundreds of temporary visa claims. I spoke to one officer whose job it is to try to manage this massive influx of people.
I'm police captain Mr. Amoutsias Dimitris. Here are the places that all the immigrants that arrive from the coasts of Turkey, illegal every day, the port police arrest them.
If we look around, there are so many people. There are maybe 2,000.
Because there is no room inside.
There is no room.
Outside is around more than 700, 800 at the tents. The numbers rise every minute.
How are you coping?
How? We're trying to do our best. We're trying. What can we do? We work 24 hours per day with 100%. We give whatever we have.
You have capacity for 700 here. The numbers are growing and growing and growing. How do you solve this? How do you process all of these people?
It's not in our hands to solve this problem.
Can Greece deal with this alone?
No, because the final destination are not Greece. It's not Greece. All of them want to go to the North Europe.
You're a tough policeman, but is it hard dealing with this every day?
Of course it's difficult. You manage each day so many different people. They escaped from war, they've been victims of torture. There are so many different persons. And we try to do our best. It's very difficult situation here.
Anna Holligan in Lesbos, thank you very much indeed. Well, to consider the problem further and to look at some possible solutions, we put together a panel of distinguished guests in the shape of Emma Bonino, until last year Italy's foreign minister and a former EU commissioner. She joined us down the line here in London. From Oxford, Natule Nkube from the Blavatnik School of Government. He was until recently chief economist with the African Development Bank. And Alexander Casella, one-time senior official of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. He's now the author of a new book, Breaking the Rules, focusing on his time at the UN. I asked Emma Bonino, former foreign minister of Italy, another country very much in the front line of this struggle with immigration, what she made of the discourse surrounding the current situation.
First of all, let me tell you that I don't share this hysteria of an invasion or something that is not manageable and so on and so forth. We are a country of 60 million people with a dramatic demographic decline. We received the last year to June 53,000 people. This year we are receiving 56,000. So frankly speaking, I think we should really stop with this hysteria and try to put some legality and also some humanity into this. That this is not an invasion. It's not a crisis that we couldn't manage.
Alexander Casella.
Europe today is actually confronted with two major crises. One is the Syrian crisis, which is essentially a refugee crisis with a migration component, and part of these refugees who have found asylum in the countries bordering Syria are now slowly migrating to Europe, not to look for safety because they have it, but because they want to migrate. And the other crisis is the Mediterranean crisis, which is essentially a migration crisis with a small refugee component. Now, to confront this crisis, there is basically nothing. There are three types of European countries. The transit countries like Spain, Italy, and Greece, where most of the migrants land but don't want to stay. There are the countries who are not concerned, like Bulgaria, Romania, the Baltic states, etc. And then there are the countries of destination, like the UK, Switzerland, Germany, etc. And ultimately, if there is to be a solution, and hard choices. I think the emphasis is hard choices. It is the countries of destination which will have to take things in their own hands.
Matuli Nkube, I mean, we got there a picture of what it's like from the European perspective. We get, meanwhile, via the news, these some of the horrific images of desperate migrants on overcrowded, leaking, unseaworthy ships crossing the Mediterranean. It has to be put this in context there, doesn't it? For sub-Saharan Africa and those migrants, they're travelling on a huge journey.
Absolutely. It's a long journey. You can imagine, if you're from Eritrea, you have to go through Sudan, what a vast country, then into Libya, then eventually onto some port, and then onto this dingy or dreadful boat. It's a long journey. Individuals are spending $3,000 because they see the upside in taking the risk to get across that desert, across the dangerous seas, and then the upside is future income if they get a job, which they're most likely to, and also remittances back to their families who might have assisted them to raise the $3,000 or so. Right now, Africa is remitting something like $60 billion in terms of Africans abroad sending money back home to their families. So these are huge numbers, which are almost as large, if not slightly higher, than all the aid that Africa is receiving.
Emma Bonino, you are saying that it's not specifically a huge problem in itself, but you're probably in a minority saying that as a politician in Europe. I mean, there is a growing body of political opposition to this level of migration. People saying it's got to be checked at some point. It can't be allowed to just carry on unchecked.
I know I am in a minority, but I am an Italian. So I know that between the First and Second World War, we left our country by millions, right? And now, and for the same reason that these people are leaving their own country, just to look for a better future for our families. And we went in the same boat, sinking in the coast of Brazil or in the coast of New York, and we were rejected for a health reason. My grand-grandfather tried again, over and over again, till he managed to do it. So let's tell people that we are facing a structural problem, that emigration is with us since humanity. Now it's going faster and faster because the world is interconnected and because we have millions of people in the South Mediterranean that are leaving their own country for one reason or another. So if we at least have the right analysis and we explain to people, so I don't deny it is a problem, but I resist the fact that it's something that we cannot settle.
Can I just bring in Alexander Caselli on that? I mean, what's your view? Can this honestly be allowed to continue the way it is? What do you think?
My question basically is, yes, Europe needs migrants, but are these the right migrants? Is it up to Europe to choose the migrants they want, or to the migrants to impose themselves on Europe? Do people have the impression that they're losing their identity, their national identity, their cultural identity, and that governments really are not controlling this phenomenon?
Emma Bonina?
Is it really possible that we choose what kind of immigrants we want? It's not only what we want. It's also their determination and their human rights. They have the rights to survive and to look for a better life and not to be killed. So I think that we have to keep in mind all these kind of components. We are not the only owner of the world. What are we going to do? To kill them in the Mediterranean? To shoot them? Or what? So I think that we have to start from fresh to understand what's going on in the world.
Mutuli Nkube, in that context, do you think that the tone of the debate that you're hearing in Europe is getting it right?
Well, I think the tone of the debate in Europe is the right one. I mean, there are security challenges that needs to be dealt with. That's a reality. And then there are also desperate, refugee cases that need to be accommodated from a simple human rights point of view. But at the same time, there are people with skills. I think they should sift out and see who has the skills to contribute to the labor market within Europe and be a productive, immigrants within these economies in Europe. So I think that should be done properly. Not everyone is a security challenge, neither is everyone a refugee. There are some elements which are genuine migration and skill-driven. But it's important for Europe to come together.
Emma Bonino, any sign of them coming together?
Yeah, but no, Europe is not coming together. And please, we have to remember that 15 years ago, the Commission put forward a proposal for a common migration policy, and it was rejected unanimously by all member states. They said we will deal with it on a national basis, and that is one of the results. But from the economic side, let me tell you that most of the immigrants coming to Italy, for instance, they are doing the job that no Italians wants to do anymore. For instance, in construction, for instance, in collecting tomatoes, for instance, in services to all the people. So they are not stealing any jobs. They are just doing the jobs illegally because they are not legalized. But also the 5 million who are legalized are mostly involved in this kind of jobs that no Italian wants to do anymore. And I think this is true all over Europe.
We're going to look at some of those specifics in a second, but Alex Casella, I mean, do you agree with that generally, that that there is a mismatch between the rhetoric and the economic realities here?
Partly, yes. But of course, another problem is that what are we doing with these migrants? Are we putting them in a holding center where we can see who is a refugee, who is not a refugee? One aspect which I think has not yet been looked into is to establish some sort of partnership with the African side of the Mediterranean. Try to work out a system by which these people would be landed, let's say, in Tunisia, which would deter some from coming, and then select them from Tunisia. Find a partnership with countries like Kenya or others where Eritreans, who definitely deserve asylum, I mean, no Eritrean should be sent back. The regime is awful. They are refugees, the Eritreans. But try to find reasonable regional solution. And the problem is that this isn't even discussed.
OK, well, we're going to look at some of those solutions in a little bit more detail in the second half. For now, you're listening to In the Balance from the BBC with me, Ed Butler. We're talking Europe's migrant crisis with my guests, Emma Bonino, the former Italian foreign minister and EU commissioner, Mutuli Nkube, formerly of the African Development Bank, and Alexander Casella, author of the new book on migration, breaking the rules. So we've talked about some of the broad politics of the migrant crisis. I'd like now to look briefly at some of the more specific economic issues. We're joined by Dr. Ian Preston, a migration economist from the Centre for Research and Analysis of Migration at the University College London. Professor Preston, you've been looking at the effects of the economics here on the receiving countries. Emma Bonino has touched on this already. Is it true to say that they're generally a positive boon for these receiving countries economically?
The evidence is that they're not harmful to, at least to the labour market of the receiving country. I think the concern that people have is often that they will come in, that they will take job opportunities away from people who are already in the country, or that their competition will drive down the wages of workers in the country. These are questions that have been very extensively looked at in a lot of different countries, a lot of it from the US, but also a lot within European countries. Immigrants are young and they tend to work and they pay more in taxes than they take out in benefits or in claims on public services. Of course, eventually they will age and they will start to make claims, but it will always remain the case that they arrive after the cost of their education. So it seems quite evident that it's beneficial for public finances, at least.
Mthuli Ncube, we've talked about the incredible risks. You think that these people know what they're taking on when they cross the oceans?
It's a calculated risk. They know that if they survive, the upside is there. They'll be able to have a better living. And those who have some skills, they get jobs, and even at the lower end of the labour market. And then everyone can say, hang on, if this is a risk worth taking, I can do 3,000 miles across the Sudan and Libya. And you know, if I make it, my life will change forever.
I would like to take you now to just to what Alexander Casella was talking about a little earlier, the idea of bilateral deals, I suppose, being struck between the European countries and the countries of sub-Saharan Africa, perhaps, where some of these migrants are coming from. Mthuli Ncube, do you think that that makes any sense?
Absolutely. I think that there's scope for the EU to work with the African Union and those countries, even on a bilateral basis, to make this work. It is certainly worth trying.
Alexander Casella, how on earth would this economic deal work then?
The devil is in the details, and it will take a tremendous amount of work to find a system that is actually operative.
Are you talking about money transfers from EU countries to these developing economies?
No, I'm mostly talking about Europe accepting a greater amount of legal migration from Africa. Now, the fact is that we need skills, and that an African who has a certain skill and wants to come to Europe finds it extremely difficult, if not to say impossible. So some channel should be found, but there should also be in parallel another channel where an illegal immigrant who is not a refugee, and insist very much on the fact that he's not a refugee, can be sent back. In other words, there has to be a deterrent, but also a facilitation of movement. And this will need imagination, it will need creativity, it will need dialogue. And unfortunately, I must say, from the side of the Europeans, we haven't seen anything of that.
Emma Bonino, do you think any of that makes sense?
Well, first of all, it will need an enormous amount of time. It's not for tomorrow morning, so we are speaking in a few years' time, provided that everything goes well. And on top of that, you go country by country. Maybe you can make a satisfactory agreement with Senegal, or you can make a satisfactory agreement with Tunisia, but you don't make it with Eritrea, definitely, or you don't make it with Somalia. Maybe we can try some pilot project with some countries here and there. And by the way, there is a summit of the European Union with the African Union scheduled by September or October in Malta, and I think they will discuss this issue. But keep in mind that immigration is our priority or our problem or our crisis. For them, as much as people leave and send back remittances, it's not a problem.
To what extent would actually doing a deal with one of these African governments make any difference to the traffic of illegal migrants who are wanting to come anyway?
But again, let's be very clear. Most of the people who land in Italy, for instance, they don't have documents. They don't have documents exactly because they don't want to be identified. So when you hear people and we will send them back, where? Most don't have documents. So where do you want to send them?
OK, we've been talking about policy responses. Let's look at a rather more individual human response to the sight of so many migrants appearing on Europe's streets. We put this this issue to Colm O'Regan, our regular columnist there in Dublin, in Ireland.
I've just self-diagnosed with the just world hypothesis. It's a condition that makes people tell themselves that the world is basically a fair place. If I'm doing well, it's nothing to do with luck or an accident of birth. It's all my own doing. If someone isn't doing well, well, no one is saying it's their fault. But, you know, maybe they didn't always make the right decision in life. I didn't think I believed in this reductive view until I caught myself in this frame of mind recently. About a half a mile from my house is a wet hostel. It provides a room where homeless people can drink alcohol. Every evening, they gather there, waiting to be admitted. They're not picturesque. I cycle past them, and I drift into a thought that blames them for their predicament. As I go past them, they sort of blend into one and become less human. Then I stop at traffic lights, accidentally look one of them right in the eye, and they're human again, and I realise what I've just done. Now, these people mightn't be saints. There's a possibility some of them might not be nice people at all, people who systematically made the wrong choices. But chances are, chance dealt them a bad hand. This is not a direct comparison to the attitude to refugees. That situation defies such trite equivalence. The reason I use them as an example is that in Ireland, we've yet to witness anything on the same scale as what's going on in the Mediterranean. A simple glance at the map of Europe tells you Ireland is not the first place desperate people with few possessions will land. Although we should have some vague idea, in 1847, 18,000 Irish people died in coffin ships crossing the Atlantic while fleeing famine. So from my safe distance, I don't have a solution to what's happening with the refugee crisis at the moment. The only thing I can think of that still applies to all the people we see risking death is that we might start from the basis of remembering that they are human beings. Yeah, that is trite, but it might be worth saying it because of all the language that is used about them. We hear about the tidal wave of immigrants, a flood of illegal immigrants, epidemic proportions, threatening to swamp. It's easy to forget that they are human beings. And so when coming up with a solution, let's keep that in mind.
Colm O'Regan. So an influx, not a flood, a tide or a swamp. Alexander Casella, does that narrative of crisis here risk dehumanising the victims, do you think?
To a certain extent, yes. But I think people who have to deal with the issue realise that there is a human component, which is very important. And it is this human component that makes the management of the problem so difficult. I mean, I fully agree with Emma Bonino when she says how difficult it is to register these people. They don't provide their names, they don't provide their fingerprints. You have a problem there. I think one of the solutions of this problem, if it can be done, is simply to stop landing them on European soil, to have a holding center somewhere in Africa, which permits the creation of a state of mind where these people will realize that they have to come clean and that some will be returned. Now, it's easy to say, and it's far less easy to implement.
Aren't there already island prisons practically like that, in Lampedusa and elsewhere?
Well, I don't know if they are island prisons, because then they're transferred to the mainland. And what we certainly do not need is a prison of any sort. But something has to be done.
Matulu Nkube, is there any way of changing the incentives here? I mean, we're talking about economics, we're talking about numbers, and in a way, this is a very pure issue of supply and demand, isn't it? There's a demand for cheap labour in Europe, and there's a huge supply of cheap labour coming from Africa and the Middle East.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a worthy investment in taking that kind of risk. Absolutely. Just to agree here with Alex that, look, we need to somehow find a way to contain this issue at source, either in the country itself through some kind of incentives or restrictions, or indeed some holding point somewhere. Our problem is Libya. Where do you stand to create this environment with Libya, which has collapsed? Because that's also part of the problem, that having an ungoverned and an ungovernable Libya and insecurity actually is part of the problem. They're just finding it so easy to get across. Traffickers find it easy to operate, and fixing Libya is part of the solution.
Emma Bonino.
There is no miracle solution to this problem. And there is no miracle solution to immigration worldwide. We have a crisis in the United States, we have a crisis in Asia. So there is no miracle solution. We can try here and there to better manage the problem, keeping in mind that it is a structural problem that will stay with us for years to come.
We'll have to leave it there. My thanks to all my guests, Emma Bonino, the former Italian foreign minister and EU commissioner, Matule Nkube, former chief economist with the African Development Bank, the economist Professor Ian Preston, and the author Alexander Casella. Now, lots of you got in touch with us about last week's show, in which we looked at the Millennium Development Goals. We considered how effective they've been in alleviating poverty around the world. Stephen Katete from Zambia joined in the Facebook conversation on the World Service Facebook page, #BBCITB. He said, poverty is worse in sub-Saharan Africa than it was before. Kwaze Oteng from Ghana wrote in, this idea is very laudable, but in Africa, a continent plagued with corruption and mismanagement, these goals are unachievable. But there was a more positive note from Daxinride Abdike, who got in touch from Nairobi in Kenya. She said, MDGs are highly regarded here in Kenya. You can join in our online conversations about this topic or any that you hear on the programme via BBC World Service Facebook or via Twitter, #BBCITB. And don't forget, you can subscribe to our podcast, which you'll find at bbcworldservice.com/InTheBalance. But for now, from all of us here on the show, goodbye.